From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Tuesday when Governor Andrew Cuomo suggested that even after the pandemic ends, remote learning could become a regular part of school and student life. Now, the governor did not say that students won't return to physical classroom space. He said the following, quote, "The old model of everybody goes and sits in a classroom and the teacher is in front of that classroom and teaches that class, and you do that all across the city, all across the state, all these buildings, all these physical classrooms. Why? With all the technology you have?" End quote. And the governor went on to conclude the following, quote, "It's hard to change the status quo, but you get moments in history where people say, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for change. I get it. I think this is one of those moments," end quote. Cuomo announced that New York State is partnering with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to design a plan for post-pandemic education. And here are some of the things on the table. Again, it's not eliminating physical classrooms entirely. Here are the things they are going to examine. How schools can use technology to provide more opportunities to students no matter where they are. How technology can help provide shared education among schools and colleges. How technology can reduce educational inequality, including for students learning English as a new language. How schools can use technology to meet the needs of students with disabilities. How the state can provide teachers more tools to use technology. And how technology can provide greater access to high-quality education no matter where students live. This hour, we examine what we're learning about teaching and education from the pandemic. Our guests include John Baines, an English teacher at Our Lady of Mercy, a longtime teacher in a number of districts, Fairport for a long time. He's also a Monroe County legislator, and he's on the line with us now. Hi, John. Thanks for taking the time.
Good afternoon, Evan.
Also with us is Fiona Connolly, a 12th grade student at OLM, Our Lady of Mercy. Fiona, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Hello to Beth Larder, a school librarian at Walt Disney Elementary School in Gates, Chilai. Beth, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
Thanks for being here. And Susan Cavanaugh is a parent who's with us as well. Hi, Susan. Thanks for making the time for the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
I just want to ask all of you first how those initial comments from the governor landed with you. And then we're going to talk about realistically if there are pluses to take from the experience of the pandemic and what you think maybe those pluses ought to be. But let's just start with those initial comments. John, what everybody was talking about was, you know, his line saying, you know, the old model of everyone goes and sits in a classroom and the teacher's in front of the classroom. Why do that with all the technology you have? And then he says, you know, this is one of those moments where, you know, the status quo is hard to change, but people may be ready for it. John, do you see some wisdom in those comments?
Well, I think that the idea that kids are sitting in a static way in a classroom and there's a kind of a paper mache statue of a teacher up there teaching is a notion that's embedded in the image that the governor created. I'm super excited to talk about the positives of online learning and technology, but it's very, very important that the governor understands the way parents understand and students understand that teaching is and learning is incredibly dynamic. It's kinetic.
It's already dynamic, you mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I've had the privilege, because I was the leader of the Fairport teachers for 30 years, of being in kindergarten classrooms and first grade classrooms. And it's just one of the things that I'm very concerned about is this idea that we're going to have a wholesale reform based on the on technology. And I think that the problem is that if you're assuming that all children are the same, they have the same executive skills, we have to remember, I'll end my first comment with this, you know, we have to remember that our clients in pre-K are just out of diapers. And our clients in 12th grade, some of them have already been to basic training for the Marines. So we have to think about the diversity of the learner and the suitability of the delivery system to the diverse learners in our state and in our country.
Beth Larder, you made some remarks on social media that just seemed to be indicating some concern with the direction of the governor's comments, and I would love for you to sort of elaborate more on that.
Yeah, I would echo everything that was just said, that my experience in education has always been that it's dynamic, it's interactive. Students are very rarely just sitting and listening to a teacher lecture, especially at the elementary level. And I've also seen so many of the benefits of being in a space together and what happens in that space. And I also think a lot of teachers share my concern that this idea that technology will replace us, which obviously we know is not true, but I think outside of education there sometimes are some ideas that technology is going to come in and then we won't need as many teachers because, you know, they can take some of their classes online. And I think the concern is just, how we're being perceived by other people and people not understanding what is actually happening in classrooms. So, I would agree with everything that was just said.
Did you hear, Beth, in the governor's comments, anything that made you concerned that whenever we're ready to sort of throw the restrictions out and get kids back to the physical setting, that either the governor or state leaders won't want to or will reduce the actual in-person learning time? I mean, is there a worst case that's in your mind that you are concerned about now?
I don't know if I had any specific concerns like that, that it would completely change the way we structure school. I think it's just that assumption that more technology is better. I think that was the thing that I took the most issue with, just in general, what I'm hearing about what people are responding to in terms of online learning is that what we're doing right now is the best we can do for right now because technology is the way that we are able to sort of, in some sense, be with our students. But I don't think that more technology is always better. I think more intentional use of technology is better. And I think that we will learn how to use technology better and more intentionally, but that will probably mean going back that we do scale back on how much we use technology and use it just for very specific purposes.
Mm-hmm. Susan Cavanaugh, what did you hear in the governor's comments as a parent?
Well, as a parent, you know, when I think he initially made his comment, I had this overall sense of panic. And I did so because it was just such a vague response or a vague way to address the current pandemic situation. And, you know, his willingness or wanting to explore other options down the road to potentially make education more accessible, I think is one thing. But, you know, when he first came out with this, it was more of a blatant, we can reshift and reimagine and reinvent education using all the technology that we have in front of us. But, you know, as a working parent and in a household with two full-time working parents and just having a lot of friends who are parents and all in the same situation right now, where we've really had to shift the way we work every day to make sure that our kids don't fall behind academically, I was really concerned that this was a blind spot that the governor needed some, frankly, education on, because I don't know that he is really talking to the parents about where we are with all of this and what our experiences have been and what do we think about some of these things going forward. So for me, you know, I think he has made some clarifications over the course of the last week or so,
sure,
but I still think it's a very broad statement and we don't know enough about it. And I'm still, you know, I still have this flag that's red and raised and waving. And I'm one of these people that has to sort of sit back and wait to see how this unfolds. But it's very concerning to me as a parent that there's this thought process that we may or may not, but may take kids out of a classroom setting and put them behind a computer all day long. And I'm not saying that's what the intent is, but I think when he initially made that comment, that's the feeling that many of us had.
Fiona Connolly, as a 12th grade student at OLM, how did those remarks land with you?
I mean, I think the main thing is just from the perspective of someone who is doing online schooling all day, I think students are becoming actually less engaged in learning with the online format, and that it's harder for people to stay concentrated when you're looking at a screen the entire day and you're completely cut out from all communication with students, because usually you work on practice problems with your friends during class time and things like that, and all of those conversations are completely cut out. And even all of my teachers have noticed that student involvement in the conversation has pretty much disappeared, that
usually we have highly conversational classes where we really discuss the concepts we're learning about, and now the conversation is mostly just a lecture from the teacher rather than an engaged class format.
Mm. Well, and so let's do two things here. Let's talk about the lessons we have been learning in two different ways. I was reading some of the remarks from Chris Hayes, who is not only a host on MSNBC, but one of the hosts of the best podcasts out there, which I feel like Beth Larder would know because she knows every podcast ever that has ever existed. But the bottom line is that Chris Hayes' remarks, it was interesting. What he said, I think, was last week. He said, you know, by the end of March, there was a lot of talk that we were learning how to Zoom. We were learning how to hold meetings virtually. We were, you know, catching up with friends that way. And that, you know, maybe that we'll come out of this pandemic and do a lot of life that way. And he said, by the end of April, we were saying, no, the lesson is that we need to go back as fast as we can to how life was before, as soon as we can. That's mostly the lesson, with some notable mm-hmm. exceptions. And I know there are exceptions, but John Baines, generally speaking, is that the lesson? That we're doing our best, that school settings, you know, that the teachers, that parents especially, that students are doing their best, but this is not optimal, that this is really not a good situation.
Well, let's talk about optimal. Mercy has the most elite IT that I know of in a school. Every single student, that they support the students, by the way, they have the technology. We were able, in a matter of literally 1 hour, to transition from in-person to online. We're doing synchronous learning, which means we're simulating the school day with everyone present together, as opposed to asynchronous, where, you know, you're sending emails or you're posting material that students are viewing on their own time. We're literally taking attendance every morning. And what we realized, our leadership realized, we're so good at it that we're too good, that it's really overwhelmed the kids, exhausted them. So the leadership immediately said, we have to start taking every Wednesday off just to kind of take the foot off the accelerator. So I think that my experience, and I'm a bit of a Luddite myself, I mean, my main technology for teaching over the years has been chalk. So for me, teaching English, it's very, very powerful. The tool is very powerful. And the kids at OLM are accustomed to the technology. They all have a device. And all of that, because that's the most optimal scenario, tells us that even if that is too much, and you hear Fiona, because when I want to know what's going on in schools, I ask my students. And so when I hear Fiona, I haven't heard Fiona speak on this before, but when I hear her share that perception, it tells me that now, let's move away from the optimal situation we have at Mercy and take a look at schools where the kids do not have equity and access in terms of technology, where kids do not have a safe place in their home, where they're not being fed. As you know, every student I have five grandkids living in the city, and every student in the Rochester City School District is fed at least one meal, most of them two, I think, per day. So the idea that in the most optimal, I'll end with this, if I'm in the most optimal situation and I'm very concerned about the mental health of my students and their kind of isolation of them, mind you, we're all isolated right now, then I'm really, it kind of breaks my heart to think about students who are not in the optimal situation.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And as you talk about, John, you know, students sometimes feeling exhausted by this, somebody somewhere has to explain why, if we are home most of the time and we are, many of us are actually sleeping more, and we're going to talk about that this hour, that students, that may be a benefit. Students are actually sleeping in a little bit, and that's good for them. But where most of us are actually sleeping, and yet I'm exhausted all the time. How am I exhausted? What am I exhausted from? It's the whole, there's going to be a whole books written on the pandemic and the impact on us psychologically, on us physically. It's fascinating. We are trying to learn as we go. But Beth Larder, do you generally agree with the Chris Hayes idea that, no, the real lesson here is let's get back as fast as we can to how we did it before?
Yeah, I think similar. I think it's almost a screen fatigue. Like, I think students, they just can't spend this much time on their computers, and we wouldn't do this to them in school, I noticed even before the closure, about halfway through the school year, if I told students, you know, if we finished our work in library a little early, I would say, oh, you can have a little free time to play games on these sites on your computers. And they just were not very interested in that. And so one week I said, okay, you can go on these sites on your computer, or you can play these card games that I have here. And almost the entire class would rather play physical games than be on their computer at that point, because I think they had had enough at that point. And so I'm imagining that's probably what's happening at home, is at a certain point they've just had enough and they're checking out. And every week since this started, there's been a little bit less engagement on what we're doing. And I think most teachers are probably finding similar results of that. It's just not sustainable.
Well, let me ask Susan and Fiona about that, because I'm frankly really encouraged by that comment. As a parent myself of an 8-year-old who, you know, in a normal school day outside of a pandemic, there's still a lot of technology at hand. And Susan Cavanaugh, as a parent yourself, I mean, I'm curious if you feel the same way. You hear Beth talking about students, if you give them the technology option, eventually they may feel tapped out of it, because I think a lot of parents are worried that kids are going to be addicted to screen time or want it all the time. And what we're hearing from Beth and other teachers is you can overdo this, and the pandemic doesn't give you a lot of options. I mean, we have to be on screens. But what we are learning is be very careful before you think that technology is going to be a fast answer here. Do you think that that there's something to it, Susan? I mean, am I being overly optimistic as a parent?
Well, I think so there's a lot of perspectives on this call right now that are interesting to me. And the reason I'm going to be very careful how I say this, because I think if you talk to a variety of parents across different school districts, you're going to get a different answer about the level of teaching that has been administered across the board.
That's fair. Yeah.
And I think it's not, you know, from my perspective, I think we're in a situation in a school district where there are some students that are receiving, you know, very detailed academic schedules that include screen time, that include, you know, 30-minute sessions with either a teacher or some kind of educational format that have a lot more interaction. And then you have other students that are faced with the asynchronous learning of, you know, just emails and postings and go out and get it and figure it all out and get it done. But the message around all of that, I think, uniformly has been, you do the best that you can. Get done what you can get done. Don't feel the pressure. So, you know, I'm kind of in the camp of, you know, I'm working in a situation where my student my daughter is getting the academics from emails and postings and maybe a couple of videos here and there. So there really hasn't been a lot of screen time for her to that degree. But I will say, as a working parent with also a husband who's working in the home, I would almost prefer a little bit more video interaction, a little bit more screen time that helps her engage. Because I think when you're faced with all of this paperwork, they're going to have questions. They're going to have comments. They're going to want to tell you a story about it. You know, and that's what they get in the classroom. They get that opportunity in the classroom. But it's very hard as a parent if you don't have some other level of engagement for your student, for your child. It's hard to manage it. So, you know, my perspective is going to be a little different in that respect, because I think I could use a little bit more screen time.
During the pandemic.
During the pandemic, yeah. And I'm talking educational screen time. I'm not talking, you know, games.
No,
Roblox,
I get you. Yeah.
No, I'm talking educational screen time that is interactive, that allows a student to hear from an authority on the subject matter at hand.
Sure. Fiona, how about you? What do you make of this idea that if we draw too much of a lesson on the benefits of technology going forward, then it could overload students on screen time? Is that possible?
Well, I think a big thing that I've always noticed at Mercy is during our break times during the day, students are never choosing to spend the time playing some game on their computer. They're always using that time to talk to their friends, engage with the people around them, and even just talk to their teachers for fun. And that people really miss that type of social interaction. And even when we have Zoom calls or Google Meets throughout the school day, it's not the same experience, because people feel a lot less comfortable turning on their mic or their camera and getting up and saying something in front of the whole class. And it's gotten to the point where a lot of people who usually are very actively participating in class are just sitting silently behind a screen watching the teacher. And the teachers will pose a question and not even receive a response from any of the students. So as much as we would like a Google Meet or a Zoom to sort of simulate the classroom experience, it doesn't quite do that as much as we would hope it would.
And to build on Fiona's point, I mean, one of the comments I heard, this is probably several years ago on this program, when we were talking about generational changes and the way we communicate with one another, there is, for a long time, there was assumption about millennials and now Gen Z that, well, they're on their screens all the time. They never want to talk to each other. Well, why are coffee shops exploding across the country? Why do we see so many young people getting together in person? Why are they willing to spend $5 on a coffee when they could make it at home? Because to Fiona's point, they actually crave that FaceTime. They crave that interaction with another person, and they know they're on their screens a lot. And I found that really powerful, and Fiona's point now just reinforces that idea that this and to be clear, I'm going to say this again. The governor is not proposing we shut down schools and kids never learn in person again. The governor's saying that we've got to learn the best lessons. So, John, I'll start with you on this. Let's talk a little about if we are taking good lessons going forward. I asked the audience before the program began on social media. Here's just a few examples. Kathy says, what's good that's come out of this pandemic? More differentiated learning is possible. Several of the tools being used are intuitive and allow kids to work at their own levels. Linda says setting up their own time management skills has been good. HL says the best part is about seeing my teens sleep to a developmentally appropriate time. And the benefit to schools, making the unimaginable happen. If it's important, you will find a way to get it done. There's a lot there. The governor's hoping that working with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they can continue to take some of the good lessons from the pandemic to reach kids who are either in, you know, different kind of circumstances. Kids with disabilities might need more technological access. John, what have you found? I mean, is there a gem that you found in this that you said, you know what, I'm going to take this forward with me?
I think there's some definite stretching of muscles and building of capacity in terms of the users, both teachers, students, and also parents. You know, I had a student who couldn't come to school, and I hadn't seen her. I was able to meet with her one-on-one in a Google chat and tutor her one-on-one. There are students who, for reasons that, you know, are in the hands of our creator, will not speak in class. And yet they might be much more willing to type their responses in chat because, as most people now know from the platforms, you have the chat option. So that kind of you can have kids all learning simultaneously. Like when I teach Fiona's class, I'll say, all right, let's take 4 minutes. Everybody respond to this question in the chat and read everybody else's responses. If you tried to do that out loud in a class where you have to sequence the interaction and the student communication and make sure everyone's listening to everybody. So there's quite a bit going on there that is pretty cool. Now I'm teaching English, so I think it lends itself because the students are reading texts on their own and then we're engaging in the text both in writing and in speech. So I do think that I've learned, I think my students have learned, but I have to throw a butt in. But, you know, when you bring up Bill and Melinda Gates, and you talk about the governor, I ran the largest anti-Andrew Cuomo protest, educational protest, in this part of the state about 6 years ago. We had 1,000 teachers marching in the cold. It was under 10 degrees Fahrenheit because he walked it back. And I believe in this governor that he'll listen. He's been busy, so I don't expect him to get this right away. But he listened to what we were saying when he brought in the Pearson education system and a 3-8 testing regimen that was in part prompted by the federal government that was wholesale change based on technology that really had major privacy issues. And one of my major concerns about this situation is student data, student information being harvested by big tech. I don't want to get into conspiracy theories, but it's no secret, it's not a conspiracy theory, that big data and big tech are tracking everything we're doing on a computer. And I think, you know, as adults, if we're participating in that, that's our choice.
But if we're talking about five-year-olds and, you know, our kids, I have a real concern about that. So I know that wasn't perfectly responsive because I threw the little bit of a negative concern there too, but I wanted to get that on the table.
No, that's okay. Beth Larder, have there been lessons that you do think you can take forward and that we either collectively as a school community can benefit from or you as a school librarian can benefit from?
Yeah, I'm actually a big proponent of using tech in a way that's responsible and intentional. And that's something that I'm a fairly new teacher. That's something I've been very thoughtful about my first few years. And one of the things that I hope that teachers will take away from this is how to use technology to save time, to free up time that they can make those individual and small group connections with their students. So like I have many students, and so when I'm trying to assess what they know, so I know what we need to work on, I almost always do that digitally because I can get information quickly. I can have my computer organize it for me so I don't have to spend a lot of time doing that. And then I can spend more time doing what I want to be doing, which is actually talking to students. And so I'm hoping that teachers will realize what they're capable of in terms of technology, what their students are capable of, and then use that to save time that they can then use to really invest in that community. Because I think what we're really going to need coming out of this, and what we always really need, is students feeling like they're part of a community at school and feeling like someone is listening to them and watching out for them. And so anything that we can do technology-wise that will free us up, I think all of those are positives.
Okay. Susan, as a parent, do you see positives to take forward?
I certainly do. You know, I think one of the things that I work in tech, so I have an affinity for tech. My husband works in tech. And, you know, I think one of the things that technology has a real benefit of doing is keeping people connected even at many distances. And so if that's, you know, a measure of students and families being able to take vacations and kids not falling behind because they can still stay connected if they're going, you know, away during times when classes are in session and they can keep up with their studies, I think, you know, that's a real benefit. And it's all about accessibility. So if we can find a way to make education accessible from that standpoint to people that have situations that don't allow them to, you know, necessarily attend school on a regular basis, or they have to go away for an extended period of time, or they're sick, you know, I think those are huge lessons done right. But I still maintain, you know, as a parent of a seven-year-old that is a socialite in her own way, that social interaction is something that I struggle with because technology doesn't necessarily give you that outside of Teams or Zoom. So I think kids especially that are in that younger age bracket need social interaction. They need their friends. They need to learn how to problem solve and how to, you know, react emotionally or into a situation. And I think they're not going to get that from 100% or 50% screen time. They need to have that done in a face-to-face, you know, social, interactive, person-to-person kind of environment.
Sure. And to Beth's point about building community, Joe in Irondequoit emails to say, while we think of online and distance learning as democratizing education by reaching more people, we put at risk key values like cooperation, compromise, and community. These values should be inherent in the educational experience, but if students are learning on their own and largely separated from one another, how do we meaningfully make those values a part of the educational experience? That's Joe in Irondequoit. I'm not sure you can fully do that, Joe, and I think that's what Beth and Susan are saying, and that's a very, very powerful point here. Again, no one's saying fully abandon in-person learning, but I think the warning is the more technology, the more you risk losing a little bit of community building and connectivity in the human experience. Fiona Connolly, are you sleeping more? That was one of the things mentioned by one of our listeners, that their kids are actually sleeping and not feeling like they're getting dragged out of bed and, you know, sort of zombified for the first couple of periods. Are you sleeping? Are your friends sleeping a little bit more?
I mean, I still like every day at 7:30 for homeroom to check in for that. But I do find that because I'm able to work at my own pace, I am able to get things done quicker during the actual school day and start my homework if I finish the lesson plan. And I have been able to get to bed earlier, that's for sure.
Okay. Do you see a single benefit from learning on this pandemic that you would say, hey, most of this has been a grind, but here's something that we should take forward?
I think the biggest thing that I've taken from this is time management skills. Just at first, when the whole pandemic situation was coming about, I really had no idea how to manage my time, and there was no one, you know, telling me strictly what to do everything. But it was definitely a good learning experience trying to manage my time on my own.
All right, well, we're late for our only break here, and here's what we're going to do. If you're on the phone waiting to jump into the conversation, we're going to come to you after our only break. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, if you want to join the conversation about what we learned about learning from this pandemic, what to take forward and what to ditch and go right back to the way we were doing it before students had to be learning from home. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You just heard Fiona Connolly, a 12th grade student at Our Lady of Mercy. John Baines is an English teacher there and was a longtime teacher in the Fairport District. He's also a Monroe County legislator. Beth Larder is the school librarian at Walt Disney Elementary School in Gates-Chiley. Susan Cavanaugh is a parent, and we'll take some of your feedback after our only break of the hour. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, in our first hour, thinking about buying or selling a house during the pandemic. The real estate market has been on fire in the last 3 years, but will the pandemic change things? We talk to people about buying and selling. Then in our second hour, maybe you've seen friends or family post a link to Plandemic, the new fake documentary. How to talk to people about Plandemic and conspiracy theories on Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. On the subject of wearing a mask, by the way, I just want to say again, engineer Rob Braden and I had a whole conversation the other day on this program waiting for Governor Cuomo, and we did it through masks, and no one was the wiser. Masks are fine. Okay, I want to tell you about something that's coming up next Thursday. Next Thursday, the 21st of May, 8 p.m., WXXI is hosting its second live televised forum about this pandemic. And this edition that we're hosting is going to be focused on restarting the region's economy. So we're going to hear from local business owners, as well as Rochester Chamber of Commerce CEO Bob Duffy, who Governor Cuomo has recruited to lead our region's phased reopening. Monroe County Public Health Commissioner Dr. Michael Mendoza will be part of the conversation on the program next week. You can send your questions in advance, and here's the email address. If you are a small business owner, if you work in a company that has been delayed or on hold during this pandemic, you can email us with questions for the leaders and the policymakers. Forum at WXXI.org. It's forum at WXXI.org. You can also leave a voicemail. It's 585-209-3180, 209-3180. I'm looking forward to hosting next Thursday night, 8 p.m. on WXXI TV, WXXI Radio, and all of our devices. Before we grab Mike in Rochester and some other listener feedback, I want to listen to what the governor said about when we might actually have kids back in classrooms, because, you know, different states are going to move at different paces. And the governor was asked yesterday, how about the fall? Here's what he had to say.
My perspective is the situation changes so fast and the facts change and assumptions change and everything changes. Where are we going to be in September? I don't know. I don't know where we're going to be in August. I'm trying to figure out June. I understand schools need a lead time and they need to plan. We've told our schools, plan on how you will reopen for the new normal. Because think about how dramatic it is in a school, right? You have 300 kids in a classroom, in a college lecture hall. Okay. Now you can't have 300 kids in a lecture hall. Well, how many kids can I have? Well, I have 6 feet social distance. That means you can only have 72. All right. How do you run courses now with not having a gathering of students? How do you have a cafeteria without a gathering of students? So we told them to plan for a new normal. But I want to see what happens between now and then. Get some more data. Get some more information. Respectful of the time the schools need to actually plan. But I'm not ready to say what we should be doing in September on schools.
It's Governor Andrew Cuomo. And again, he's not saying he's not ready to make a call because he wants to shift everything online. He's simply saying that right now he's not ready to say they're definitely going to be back in the fall. John Baines, do you think, I mean, what's your perspective on this? I mean, we're sitting here in mid-May. Is it realistic to think we're going back in September?
I think it's a very, very difficult prognostication. and just about everybody's been wrong about something, if not just about everything so far. People a lot smarter than John Boehner have been really, really wrong. So I do think that the governor, with the his performance, I wrote a piece about his lesson plans. I think he's getting some help from his chief of staff, but his lesson plans have been brilliant. He's been communicating beautifully. And in that excerpt, he's giving the absolute 100% correct answer. And, you know, so, you know, I credit given where credit's due. And I think the governor has the highest approval ratings he's ever had. And I think the reason for that is that for the most part, he's been right on. And in the way he's proceeded, he's trying to do this on a fact basis. And I think if we want to consult the question of the future on the basis of what we want, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. We have to consult the question of what happens in the future on where the facts take us. So,
okay. Beth, do you have an expectation or a hope that you're going to be back in September?
I've been trying to keep my expectations minimal. Teachers are extremely adaptable, and I think we'll adapt to whatever happens. Obviously, I would love to be back in school in September, but not if it's not going to be safe.
Okay, Susan?
I would like to hope that we would go back in September, but I'm also realistic in that I don't think we know enough about how, you know, this is going to continue to affect us long term once the state does fully reopen. And I do think that, you know, I'm a huge fan of Governor Cuomo, so I want to say that out loud. I think from the education piece, I have some questions. But in terms of the way he's been dealing with this pandemic, I think he's done a very good job. And I do think that the approach to returning back to school has to be a very pragmatic one. That's well thought out, that takes into consideration how are the kids going to be affected. You know, I can say with absolute certainty that my 7-year-old is not going to want to sit in school with a mask all day long. And I don't know many young children that will want to do that. So I think, you know, while I'd like to believe we'll go back in September, I want to also be realistic about it and say that we don't know enough yet to know whether or not that's going to be possible. So I guess we'll sort of wait and see at this point.
Fiona, I know you're a 12th grade student, but do you get the sense that students at all different grade levels have a hope of it? I mean, I imagine kids want to be back with their friends in the fall, but realistically, what do you think students' mindset is?
I think that, honestly, a lot of people are split exactly down the middle. I think some people are thinking very realistically about we might not be back in September, but there are other people who are completely convinced that we will be back in September. I think a lot of it comes from people just really, really wanting to get back to school and needing to believe that that's going to happen. But I personally am not so sure that that's going to be a reality for us by September.
All right, let me get some feedback from listeners on the phones first. Here's Mike in Rochester. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm 70 years old. I'm kind of officially an old fart now. And the comments I originally wanted to make was about the social interaction. I think social interaction, in my opinion, is more important than anything you're teaching. It's the dynamics of what happens outside the classroom with the kids, in the lunchrooms and in the gym, that type of thing. And I think too. I think the other comment I want to make is that I've had to adapt to Zoom with my church group, and there's been some tremendous advantages to it to me. I can see, I do miss the meetings, but I really think we need the whole classroom model that we've got now. I think we need to rethink the way we educate, and this classroom model that we've got. I think it's funny, we've got this new technology, and it seems like what we're trying to do is the teacher's going to, for a certain hour, she's going to have her kids together with the technology, and it's going to be like a classroom. And I think we need to rethink that completely for it to work. I think what I've learned in school, I can learn just about anywhere as far as math and English and whatever skills I've accumulated in my life, but I can't learn the that social interaction, like I say, I think it's so fundamental that no, that's about all I've got to say.
Yeah, Mike, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that. And I think that sentiment has been reflected pretty strongly by the panel today. And so before I let them respond to that, let me just read an email from Gene, who has a different view. Gene says, Evan, it sounds to me like the panel is prejudging this issue. As I understand it, the governor and the Gates Foundation is just going to study this issue. Their study has barely begun. The panelists sound like they're assuring or assuming that the study has been complete. And the ultimate recommendation is that computers should replace teachers in our educational system. In my opinion, there are an almost infinite number of recommendations that the study may make, from the use of computers exclusively to elimination of all computer assistance in learning. Wouldn't we be better off waiting for the report and then responding to the recommendations made? Gene, my answer to that is no. I think we ought to have conversations publicly, just as the policymakers are having these kinds of conversations, similar to, so if John Baines is a teacher, but he's also a county lawmaker, and if the county was considering a new policy that could impact a lot of people, I wouldn't wait till John and his colleagues on the legislature were done to tell us what's going on. We'd have conversations on this program because what we're seeking to do is have thoughtful, not sensationalistic conversations that allow everyone in the community to participate and allow the policymakers to hear it, to hear the voices. So no, I don't think people are assuming that the Gates Foundation or the Cuomo administration is going to say no more teachers, all computers. I don't think anybody's assuming that, and the governor hasn't said that. But they are saying if we move in a direction of more technology, you better be careful because there are real risks and downsides. And if the policymakers are people who are not in classrooms or school buildings every day, there may be some blind spots. I think that's all reasonable. So, Gene, I appreciate that. But I don't know, John, I don't think we all assume anything yet. Do you, John Baines?
No, I mean, the frame of reference of the decision makers is a critical factor, and we all have frame of reference bias. We assume that what works for us works for others, even though it's false. And if you go into a classroom with that assumption, you'll be disabused of it. So Bill Gates and Melinda Gates are remarkable people, but their record in education is actually an abysmal failure, I think, by their own evaluation and by their own statement.
Are you talking Common Core or something else?
I am.
Okay.
And a lot of the stuff that they did. You know, I always joke around that if I've had any success as a teacher is because I was not a good student. And I understand that I don't think there's anything wrong with students who struggle because they aren't, you know, kind of congratulating my sense of who I am. So you have Eric Schmidt from Google, who's a brilliant billionaire. And you have Bill and Melinda Gates, who are brilliant billionaires. And they're the three names that I've heard of. I think the governor's starting to walk it back. I think the governor is smart. I think he will walk it back. But we need, you said it, but I'm going to just underline it. We need Fiona Conley. She's going to Notre Dame this fall, but maybe we can get Fiona Conley to be on this committee. We need kids from all over this state. We need teachers from the state. We need parents from the state. And so when we reimagine education is the engine of American democracy. It is the most important institution in virtually every community in our country, especially you get out into rural America where the entire community coalesces around the public school. So this has got to be a very participatory, dynamic, and democratic change. And I think that in some ways, the governor, by naming these basically oligarchs as the emblems of the change, I bet you he's rethinking that now. But that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Well, and let me also say to Gene, or to really anybody who's emailed me or jumped at me on Twitter who wants to know, where do you stand on Bill Gates? You know, isn't he the worst or isn't he the best? I actually don't think either. I'll tell you what I think of Bill Gates just because everybody's been asking. I think Bill Gates is someone with more money than most people could ever dream of, and I think he wants to accomplish really important things. That's what I think about Bill Gates. I think he has absolutely the right intention when it comes to everything from disease spread and stopping disease to improving education. Now, he has his own biases, but he has a lot of influence because he has a lot of money. I don't think for one second he is part of an international conspiracy designed to force vaccination on all of us, and there's no evidence for that. But I think it's also fair to evaluate the record, as John Baines is saying, and then ask, you know, if you were designing a panel to try to figure out what we do with the lessons from the pandemic, would you have Bill Gates and Eric Schmidt on there, or would you have John Baines and Beth Larder and Susan Kavanaugh and Fiona Connolly? The reason we put this panel together is we want people who are in the classroom or in the school communities every day. I'm sure the governor will talk to people who are in the school communities. But we think that these voices really matter. And that's why we're doing this now. It's not to say Bill Gates is right or wrong or the right person or the wrong person. And I do think he has his heart in a very good place. I don't know what the results will be. We will find out. I think he's trying to fund a vaccine as fast as he can. I don't think he's doing it for nefarious purposes. I think if you listen to him with Ezra Klein in his 90-minute conversation on Ezra Klein's podcast, you'll get a lot of Bill Gates' mind and insight. He's a fascinating, yes, probably a brilliant person. So, but I think it's also fair for us to have these conversations while they are setting the policy before they're done. I think that's part of what we do here, not sensationalized. Mm-hmm. Just trying to sort of stay level-headed. And I'll ask our other guests here. I mean, Beth Larder, I don't think anybody thinks on this panel it's a done deal, right? I mean, I don't think anybody in your school community thinks computers are replacing everybody yet. Do you?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Yeah.
Yeah, Susan Kavanaugh, I mean, I don't think the sun has set on this conversation.
No, and I think we all said that in the beginning. I think and to address the, you know, the comment about why are we talking about this now without enough information, you know, I think to just sort of reinforce your point, Evan, is we have to talk about this now, because making noise after something's already been put into place doesn't do any bit of good. If we don't talk about this now while the wheels are in motion and while we possibly can try to change the direction of the trajectory of where this is going to go, this is the time we have to be talking about this. So, you know, I think people don't want to kind of get caught up in the commotion or the debate when there's already enough going on in the world. But with these types of issues, we can't wait for the discussion to happen after the fact. Things are only going to change in the right direction if we talk about them and make the noise that we need to make while these discussions are happening.
Sure. And listeners, if you're the type of person who heard me say something nice about Bill Gates and you think that the best thing you can do is send me an email with a picture of a sheep, it's already been done. I got it. All right. A few other email comments here. Jean writes to say, Evan and guests, remember that remote learning does not transfer well to all subjects, such as art, band, orchestra, chorus. Too often there's an assumption that remote learning can work for everything. Fiona, what's been the hardest translation to remote learning for you as a 12th grade student?
Well, I'm actually very, very involved with art at my school. So that has probably been the biggest, you know, transition with my life, is that you lose that in-class experience where in an art class, everybody is giving each other feedback and advice. And when you don't know where to go with your next piece, you turn to not just your teacher, but your fellow students for advice. And you instantly see that connection lacking when you transition to online, because you're not getting that day-to-day feedback as you work on a piece. And with other classes like choir and orchestra, you're not really able to practice together in the way that you're used to. And online, like, there's no physical way of doing an online orchestra class that is anything like the actual in-classroom experience.
Well said. Let me read a little bit more from listeners. Here's Wayne, who says, I think that the emphasis away from sports and extracurricular activities has been a good thing. These have had outsized influence on the education system for some time now, and education has suffered because of it. That's Wayne. Susan, what do you think?
I disagree, because that's all part of the social interaction. I think, you know, the kids are missing that. So I think, you know, not being able to have that level. Now, granted, my daughter's 7, so she's not really into sports. But I think, you know, if you talk to yet, but I think if you talk to any one of my friends that has kids in sports, that's a huge component that's missing.
John Baines?
Well, if I'd lost my last year playing ball, which was 49 years ago, to show what a geezer I am, like your caller earlier. If I'd lost my last year of playing ball, I'm still heartbroken about the last game we lost in the War Memorial.
Is this going to be a long sports story? Is this going to be a long sports story?
Okay. No, it isn't. The point I'm making is that one of the most heartbreaking aspects of this has been that our young people have not been able to participate. The school plays were canceled, and
we're talking about on the artistic level. And it's important. In America, we have a philosophy about education that we're going to give kids a lot of different ways to get hooked into the community of school. This is why we still have, car repair classes in public schools. This is why a school like Mercy will offer such a vast array of opportunities. And any opportunity you have to hook a child to the experience, everybody needs joy, and everybody gets joy in a different way. So the more opportunities for kids, and so, you know, per Fiona's comment, I walked by that art room. You know, one last comment for me, I learned more about education from a guy who I share a room with. His name is Mike Metzler, because he's created in this room this incredibly warm environment for kids, manipulatives, card games, tricks. He's got guitars in there, and it's amazing. It's a magnet, and every day I see kids come in to this space just to be with him and enjoy that experience, and that's what it's all about.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for being with us, because this is the first of a lot of conversations. And I think the governor is right to say we've got to figure out what are the good lessons and take forward from this pandemic. That is absolutely on the money in schools, in life, in our daily planning, in business. There's a lot. And this is part of that. John Baines, an English teacher at OLM. Thank you, John. Nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Fiona Connolly, a 12th grade student. Good luck at Notre Dame and on the rest of your career. Thank you, Fiona.
Thank you so much for having me.
Beth Larder, here's to all school librarians. You at Walt Disney Elementary School in Gates, Chile. Thanks for the work you and your colleagues do.
Thank you.
And Susan Cavanaugh, nice talking to you. Thanks for sharing your experience.
Thank you.
All right, the governor is on live in 90 seconds. We'll talk to you tomorrow.